Hello and welcome to the best podcast in the Valley for 2020 as voted on by the readers of Phoenix Magazine. You've downloaded another stellar episode of Mac Watson Talks. On this episode, can you lose your job for not being vaccinated? The short answer is yes, and we'll tell you why. Also, have you noticed something about the saguaro cactus this year? Scientists say it's not a good thing, but it's really pretty. And a man named Florida gets arrested in what state? Yeah, you guessed it. And a hate symbol that has been sprayed on a car in Maricopa? What should happen to the punk who did it? I've got that and more, so let's get started. This is episode 149.
You're listening to Mac Watson Talks, Season 2. Voted best podcast in the Valley for 2020 by the readers of Phoenix Magazine.
Every day in Arizona, there's 500 or 600 new cases of coronavirus. These are people that are having new tests of coronavirus. And, you know, not every day, but a lot of days during the week, we're reporting around a dozen deaths a day from coronavirus. So we're not through it yet. And yet we're going back to work. We're going back to some quote unquote normalcy. And there are some people complaining about what's happening as they go back to work.
Yeah, employers are allowed to require you to get a vaccine before the employees can return to the workplace. So says a government agency, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission.
And this is the federal government saying that.
Yeah, the EEOC said in a statement that their laws do not prevent an employer from requiring all employees physically entering the workplace to be vaccinated for COVID-19. That there are some exemptions for people with disabilities, including pregnancy, or those that claim their religion prevents them from getting vaccinated. However, they will need to show that they are not posing an undue hardship on the operation of the employer's business by not getting vaccinated.
So, right. So if you're an employer and you're saying you have to be vaccinated to return to work and your position is, say, dealing with immune compromised people, maybe you're like a receptionist at a medical clinic. Even if you're pregnant, even if your religion says you can't, they can basically say, I guess you can't return to work at all and you'll lose your job for not being vaccinated, because that's an undue risk to what we are doing here in the workplace. And so even if you are exempt under a medical or religious exception, if the employer can show that it's an undue hardship, you may lose your job.
But this is, I would assume this is in very small cases. If you work in an office in a cube farm, let's say, I don't see an employer really saying much about the undue hardship. I think is really slim to none, don't you think?
Right. But I think you say it's slim to none, but it's, I think the very cases that that will become before the EEOC are those where employers are requiring it because of the very nature of the business they do. That's
right.
Healthcare workers, people who work with vulnerable populations, and those are the employers that are saying, we want to require you to be vaccinated. And we're not talking about people who, you know, work in call centers probably or something,
yeah.
You know, like those aren't.
Right.
And so, but so in large part, it is these very specific employers that have very specific needs for not being part of the spread of the pandemic, of the virus, and that their employees are trying to claim that this is unfair. And the EEOC says, nope, that's not going to fly.
Companies are also allowed to provide incentives to encourage their employees to get vaccinated.
As if it's not enough incentive to, like, the lottery and all of that.
Right. But some people are just hard-headed or quote-unquote lazy. We've seen that certain states have done what they've given away money to vaccinated people, lotteries, they've done that.
United's letting you fly for a year.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. There's a lot of ways to get people excited about getting vaccinated. It's up to the employer to do it and not be what the EEO says is coercive.
Right. So coercive would be like, you'll lose your job if you don't get vaccinated. I think that's coercive, but they can't say
that's coercive. You think, I mean, that to me is just a fact, isn't it?
Well, they could say, you know, that you won't be allowed to return to the office, but you know, like then they have to prove whether it's an undue hardship or not for you not to have it. But in terms of incentives, they can be like, hey, everybody who gets a vaccine, not only returns to the office, but they get, you know, $500 a month for the rest of the year, or, you know, we give them, you know, like whatever. It's, you know, with some kind of monetary incentive, because really for them, it does pay off when you have an office where you're relatively sure that you're not going to have an outbreak. That means you're not going to have all this lost time when people are out sick because of an outbreak in your office. And so it might be worth it to give people $100 every paycheck if they're vaccinated for, you know, the next, you know, 6 months or something like that.
Isn't it a violation, though, of privacy laws for companies to ask their employees if they've been vaccinated against COVID-19?
This is not any different than asking kids to be vaccinated in schools. They're not publishing it on a board. They're not like, oh, okay, Here's the unvaccinated people. Like, here's our blacklist. But they can, as a matter of HR, say, if you know, before you return to the office, or even if you have returned to the office, we're now requiring that everybody provide proof of vaccination to HR, or if they're claiming an exemption, then they have to provide adequate documentation of that exemption, like I'm pregnant or whatever.
Or you can do it for religious reasons too.
Right, exactly. But I mean, if you're doing it for religious reasons, like, you know, there aren't a lot of religions. There's not a ton of religions that say you don't have to be vaccinated.
Right.
It's not usually a tenet of, you know, religion. In fact, those religions I would say border on not having anything to do with spirituality and have a lot more to do with, like, they're all like cultish, you know, they're like,
right,
like Christian Scientists and stuff like that. So, you know, but you'd have to provide that documentation to HR. It's not, you're not providing it to your boss necessarily, unless your boss does the HR and depending on the size of your company, but
yeah, right,
it's legit. And it's not a violation of your privacy or health laws or anything like that.
That doesn't mean there's not going to be lawsuits, I bet. I bet there are going to be people that are going to sue.
But that's what the EEOC is saying. Like, first of all, a lot of claims like that have to go administratively before you can file them as a lawsuit. And they are issuing a statement right now, like, these particular administrative claims are not going to fly. And if they're not going to fly in the EEOC, then the courts aren't going to entertain them either.
So basically, you're out of luck. It's the employer can say, you know, the EEOC has spoken, and yes, we can tell you to get vaccinated.
Yeah, somebody would have to come up with a very specific case and reason of why that wouldn't be true. And I just think over and over we've seen that the courts are not, at least the current makeup of the courts right now, and the government are not willing to entertain those types of claims, because this is about public health. And in terms of public health, you are allowed to make rules, make, you know, policies that require the citizens to do certain things for the betterment of public health.
Let's also make sure people understand you've got more than 40% of the country fully vaccinated,
mm-hmm,
7-day average of new COVID-19 cases falling to about 12,000 per day. I mean, that's still a big number, but it's not
crazy.
Like it was.
12,000 a day, and 500 of those are in Arizona.
Right.
And 12,000 divided by 50 states, you would think we would have a much less than 500. That is not true. 500 of those 12,000 are ours.
Right. People are getting back to normal, quote unquote, whatever that means now. But the Indianapolis 500 became the largest sporting event since the pandemic began. 135,000 people in the stands on Sunday. But again, we have to remind people
they didn't have a requirement that you be vaccinated or anything.
That's true. That's
true.
But
it's also an outdoor event.
That's right. But as America starts to return to normal, there are reminders the pandemic isn't over. Vietnam's health ministry says it has detected a new variant that appears to be a hybrid of the Indian and UK COVID-19 mutations. So again, we're not out of the road.
Again, they're still saying that the current vaccines cover those,
yes,
those mutations. We're not out of the woods, and we don't know. Like, here's one of like kind of those unknowns is our daughter is asked, are we going to have to wear masks when we go back to school next year? They haven't announced that yet. They're kind of waiting.
We're kind of waiting,
and
right?
Hedging and seeing what will happen. I'm sure the school would like to say, no, you don't have to wear a mask, but they'd also like to not have to close down. So they have to, there's a balance there, but like, what does that mean? Like, do we wear masks during certain times of the day? Do we wear masks? You know, like, is there a time where it's like, this is where kids are most apt to spread germs to one another? And maybe it's not sitting at their desks, but it's during recess. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think that's, I'm not sure if that's true or not, but you know, we're not completely back to normal yet.
Everyone can be mask-free in most cases outside, but those who haven't been vaccinated still need to mask up indoors. And we talked about that, too, of how it's an honor system. There's no way to really know if somebody who walks into, you know, a store, or somebody who walks into a general public area, whether they've been vaccinated or not. You just have to trust that if they have been vaccinated, that they don't need to wear a mask.
Right. So Phoenix has this campaign and has this cute kind of slogan that's like, vax on equals mask off. And it's cute. I mean, I love it. It's catchy.
Yeah.
But how do you prove somebody has their vax on so they can take their mask off?
You can't. That's right. You can't do it. It's, I mean, not in this country, at least. You can in other countries where they have more dictatorial rules than America, that's for sure.
Or where they're requiring you to carry proof of vaccine, or some countries are developing the vaccine sort of passport idea where you'll have that as part of your sort of identification.
Yeah, that's true. Also in the news this week, you found
I love this one.
You found a very interesting story, Cricket.
Side Bloom.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Isn't Side Bloom? It just sounds so awesome. So yeah, we're seeing an unprecedented amount of side bloom this year on saguaro cactuses.
Yeah, I didn't know there were such things, but cactus experts.
Those pricks. Oh, man, I had to say it.
Oh, geez. Cactus experts are tracking an unprecedented outbreak of side blooms on saguaros across southern Arizona. And typically, the giant cactuses sprout flowers only around the tips of their arms and trunks.
Right, but on the tops, basically.
Mm-hmm. But a large number of saguaros are also pushing out buds farther down their stems this year, hence the term side bloom.
And you know what? Before I even saw this article, I noticed that. Like, so saguaros can bloom anywhere between March and sort of June. It just, you know, I don't know what the environmental factors are where they start to bloom. Their bloom is usually about 20 to 30 days before their fruit bears, and that's important because of the start of monsoon season.
Yeah.
They'll be the most likely to propagate, you know, when they fall off into the desert and plant themselves a new, you know, cactus. But I noticed that there were some on the sides, and I thought that was unusual. The other thing I noticed is that it seemed like there was a lot of flowers, like not as like there was a ton of them, like all packed together. And this article said that also is part of the side bloom phenomena, is that they're seeing more flowers than usual, which means more fruit. And then these flowers that will eventually produce fruit in coming out in places further down the stem, which is used to be the ends of the stem, right? So anywhere along the stem that's grown used to be the end until it grew up somewhere on the top, right? And to see it coming out of these old tops of the cactus is really unusual. And they started studying it last year. They saw some last year, but this year the reports of it have just been coming in like crazy. And at the Saguaro National Park, which is like, you know, they should be like, that's like they're like the smartest people about saguaros ever, right? Because
right?
I mean,
yeah.
They have the name saguaro in the name of their national park. Even the biologists that are working there have no idea why this is happening. Although there are some professors that have been studying like particular forests of saguaros for 20 years, which I was like, wow, that's a dedication. And I think that was from the University of Arizona, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they had been studying the same, you know, cactuses in this like 1 mile grid or something.
Right.
And they'd never seen this happen before this year. So it's just, besides the fact that it said side bloom, which I just think that term is hilarious.
You just like the term. I mean,
you
just think it's funny.
There's some part of the cactus that's called the areola. Is that what it said?
Yeah.
And that and the word side bloom together in the same article, like, it just took me back. I was like a high schooler. I was like giggling. I thought it was hilarious.
Oh, geez. So that's the only reason that you like it.
And the fact that you could call cactus experts, you know, pricks, you know, like.
Boy, you are just on fire today with these stories, aren't you?
I know. I just love this story. I guess I'm just like in a goofy mood, but the whole fact that it is a story is interesting because we are in a drought. And in 2020 was one of the driest monsoon seasons on record.
Yeah.
And then to have this happen, it's really, the desert is telling us that we are we're in trouble.
So can't we deduce, though, because of the dry nature or the drought, that the side blooms are occurring because nature's saying we need more water? Can't we assume that?
We are going to need more fruit produced because it's so dry, we need to plant more seeds, basically. I think that's what it's telling us, is that it was so dry last year, like, we are not going to survive as a species, this plant. It's sort of written into their biology if we don't put out some more seeds. And so it's like it was just so dry last year and what's so interesting about it, it's not just like one plant, it's like universal to all these plants. And how did they all know to do it?
Probably because the conditions have been so dry, right?
Right. And it's never been seen before, but to see them all doing it, it's just like, it's so interesting. It's like whales talking in the ocean, you know, like, it's just so crazy that they all know to do this. Yeah.
Again, you just like the word side bloom.
I do.
Yeah.
It's because it's funny.
That's just some of the news this week. Thanks, Cricket.
Thank you, Mac.
You're listening to Mac Watson Talks, Season 2. Voted best podcast in the Valley for 2020 by the readers of Phoenix Magazine.
Have you done it yet? Have you joined us on Patreon? Well, if you haven't, you're missing out. Missing out on content you're not going to find anywhere else. Content like this.
But here's where my sort of fear comes from. When I was in law school, I went to law school in a town called Laramie, Wyoming, and my sister's in-laws lived in that town, and her mother-in-law had some skin cancer on her face removed. It came back and she had that removed, and they did some skin grafts and trying to reconstruct the areas of her face where they had removed the skin cancer. It was like in the balls of her cheeks, kind of, I think.
Yeah, because they go down layer by layer until they get a clean lines, right?
Yeah, and then they got to the point where there was no way they could pull skin back together, so they were grafting skin. Mm. You see what I mean? Because it was,
right.
Yeah. And so they thought they got it, but it just kept coming back in different places. And so they realized that it was moving and they were not getting good margins. And, you know, what can they do? Take your whole face off? Like, that's not really a thing. And very quickly, it metastasized into her brain.
So come on, be part of the cool crowd. Go to Patreon, patreon.com/MacWatsonTalks, and join today. Get stuff you're not going to find anywhere else, like This Is Us, Sisters Punny, and Raised in a Nut House. Content you're not going to find anywhere else, and even some cool swag as well. So go to patreon.com/MacWatsonTalks today. Time for the smackdown, and this time I'm smacking down the jerk in Maricopa who spray-painted a swastika on a car. A family in Maricopa says someone spray-painted a black swastika on their car. Patricia Lowe says her daughter discovered the symbol of hate scrawled on her mom's car when she came home Friday evening. She came in the house and she said, "Mom, somebody's messing with your car." The family checked their surveillance footage and, yes, saw someone they don't recognize walk by their house twice late in the morning. The second time around, the person captured on camera is seen lingering behind Lowe's car. At 10:45, he's walking this way, and then you see him kneeling underneath where my car is, says Ms. Lowe. Then he walks on and he puts on a hoodie and continues to walk. The Lowe family is African American, and they've lived in Maricopa for about 6 years. Lowe says her neighbors are wonderful and she's never had any issues like this before. She says it's kind of disturbing because we have 4 African American families here. This is uncalled for, you know. The Lowe's reported the incident to the police and gave investigators their surveillance footage of the suspect. Now, Lowe's daughter took to social media to inform the community about what happened. Shannon and Pete Peterson of Peterson Paint and Body saw the post and knew they had to do something to help their neighbors. I looked at my husband and I said, "You've got to be kidding me. This is still taking place?" The couple brought their mobile auto body shop to the Lowe's home and cleaned up the vandalism at no charge. Pete Peterson says, "I think nowadays it's time to definitely come together, to be Christian, to be neighborly. This hate's got to stop at this point." Lowe says she's grateful for the Good Samaritans. "If everybody would do a good deed for each other, then we'd have a better world," she says. Amen, sister. That is so true. I can't believe that. I mean, again, if this is some punk kid, the punk kid has to learn a lesson. If this is an older adult that should know better, then they should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. There is no reason to do any kind of Nazi symbol or hate symbol. There's no reason to spray paint that on other people's property. And that is the smackdown. You hear the music, you know what time that means. It's time for the last word. A man is now behind bars after police say he went on a burglary spree at multiple businesses and residences. What police say happened is early Sunday morning, a man identified as Lawrence Franklin, Florida, went into the back area of the Great Catch restaurant, opened the freezer, and threw all the White Claw alcoholic beverages and beers into a retention pond behind the business. Then, according to police, Florida walked to the Massey Barbershop, broke a side window, entered the business, took a set of clippers, charging stand, and Otium wireless earbuds. A release from the police say he then walked to Lisa's barbershop, broke the front glass door, and once inside, he stole five clippers and two pair of scissors valued at $1,000. Police say he continued his burglary spree at Carpet and Floor Source, where he broke a side window and went inside. Nothing is reported missing at this location, but according to the Zephyr Hills Police Department, Florida then walked to Living Foods Bakery and Cafe. There he broke a side door glass window, I'm sensing a theme here, went inside the business and stole approximately $800 in cash, cash bags, and keys. A pair of antique scissors from Lisa's barbershop was found in the carport of this business. Officers say he then continued to Zephyr Hills Veterinary Clinic, where he again broke a window on the west side of the business, which triggered an alarm. Nothing is reported missing at this time. Keys and bags of coins were found in the dumpster of the clinic, which belonged to Farm Fresh. Florida furthered his adventure to Little Cat Rescue, where he broke into a shed in the backyard and stole cat warmers, animal pain medication, and syringes. Police say Mr. Florida also broke into a truck and stole some tools in a briefcase. During a post-Miranda interview with officers, police say Mr. Florida admitted to breaking into all of the above-listed locations and agreed to walk officers around to where he dumped the stolen items. Why did I read this story? Because where else would Mr. Florida be from than, of course, the state of Florida? Jeez, I can't make this stuff up. Until next time! Thank you for listening to Mac Watson Talks. This episode is copyrighted and may not be reproduced in whole or part without express written permission. For more information, to become a sponsor, or to schedule an upcoming appearance by Mac or Cricket or both, go to MacWatsonOnline.com. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, or Patreon, and leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. If you like what you hear, share us with your friends. We love new listeners.